everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of UGA Sports Live. I'm your host, Roddy DeBulsey. I'm joined by Dane Young and, of course, Jim Donna, the former Georgia Bulldogs head coach, and the only reason people are tuned in on this, January 9th of 2024, the first official day of the 2024 season, although I'm sure the minute Georgia lost the SEC game, Kirby Smart turned all his calendars to 2024, but the 2023 football season is in the books. We just saw the final rankings. Georgia wound up fourth behind Texas for some reason, even though they had two losses, but they're ahead of Alabama. So Georgia ends as your number one SEC team. But as we know, the Kirby Smart and the Georgia program, number one means more than number four. So to them, this was not the season they wanted, and they're taking steps as we speak to get ready for 2024. So, Coach, to me, the I don't want to say the biggest news, but the most recent news, and we haven't had a show for a little while, is Georgia added a quarterback, and that was not something on my bingo card. I mean, we knew they were going to bring in Dylan Raiola and Ryan Puglisi, to have two quarterbacks come in, and you knew they weren't going to have five. You knew they weren't going to carry over Carson Beck, Brock Vandegrift, and Gunners. So Brock Vandegrift transfers to Kentucky, and then Dylan Raiola flips to Nebraska. So that only left them with three, but I wasn't really looking for a portal guy. I was thinking maybe, they just add one for 2025. What do you think about this Jaden Mayava?
Yeah, I think, first of all, one of the real good qualities of any coach is the ability to look into the future, and that's what Kirby's always done as far as roster management. He's always had a good bead on what his team is, what it needs, and what it's going to be. And to have a guy like this who I've done some research on, and I actually watched him against Kansas in that bowl game they played, and I was really impressed with him then. He didn't play as good as he did in some other parts of the season, other tape I've looked at. But what you do is you look at people a lot of times that have interest in you. It's a two-way street here. From what I understand, this young man and his so-called representatives reached out to us to see if we had any interest. And one of the charges that Coach Smart gives to our assistant coaches is always keep an open mind and have people ranked around the country in case something happens. And we had this guy ranked right up there among the better players in the country. And the fact that he was interested in us got us to the point where the guy made a visit and liked it. And liked it so much, he went on out to USC and told Lincoln Riley, who has a pretty good grasp on quarterbacks too, that he wasn't going to go there and he's coming here. So people ask, why would you take a guy and disrupt your room like that? I think the room is certainly unsettled after Beck. I think certainly Gunner's got a lot of potential. Brian Puglisi's got a lot of potential. But this guy here has already performed on a big stage and, has beaten a conference opponent there. I mean, played against Vanderbilt, and he knows what he's doing. I don't know who won that game. Didn't UNLV beat Vanderbilt? I'm not sure. But most people do, so that's why I just assumed it. So, but the reality is you've got to have a what we call a New York life plan and get yourself insurance-wise. And we got a lot of cards on the table now. Real quickly, you look at guys like Tate coming back, like Brinson and Stackhouse and Truss. They're coming back a lot like Chubb and Michelle did. They want to win it. And they don't want to have we lost our quarterback or, that could happen. So you've got a guy that is going to challenge these other two. They're probably going to have to beat him out experience-wise. They know the system a little bit. But you bring in a guy that's not only has the ability to throw the ball, but good size, good movement, and is going to challenge our defense and practice from a standpoint of being a multi-talented quarterback that can be a dual threat, which will help our defense get better. And it's just a win-win situation for him and for Georgia. So I applaud Kirby for, always looking into the future and roster management. And people talk about the portal and what's going to happen and everything. Certainly, we got six guys now in the portal coming here. But what we were able to do, even though we lost some pretty good players in the portal, we were able to sustain some guys and keep them here, like Julian Humphrey, that
Michael Williams
had a chance to go other places. So I think that in itself speaks highly of our team. So preseason number one on the one that came out this morning, several of them came out projections, but we'll see how that it all shake out. But looking forward to, and when you talk about 24 season starting, starts tonight, probably. I mean, usually the day after the game is when Kirby has his first meeting. I don't know if you have it tonight or not, but he'll be chomping at the bit to lay down the off-season program and the things that they're going to do. And, I had a chance to go on a little bit of tour with Scott Sinclair the other day, and I've seen that weight room, and I know a lot about what they do, but he went into some real deep details showing me some of the things they utilize to develop these players, and it is unreal, the depth and the way they work with these guys individually. I mean, the reps on the different machines are based on a good rep, a bad rep, and an average rep. It comes up there, and you got to look at the screen there. Is it green? Is it red? Is it yellow? And if you're not doing the green one, you better get your ass in gear.
Wait, you get gauged and judged on how you do each rep?
Right.
I didn't know that. No, that's awful.
We talk about the GPS, but what it's good about is it shows you what kind of effort it takes to get the kind of rep that's going to help you be a better player. So it's all programmed in there by Scott and his different assistants that you're going to do so many of these reps at this machine, and this is what a quality rep entails. So there's no wasted movement there. If it is wasted, you're doing it again.
Man, we used to cheat so much on the squats. You know, you'd kind of do that little dip when the coach isn't watching, you know, just kind of, that was enough, you know.
Yeah.
That crap doesn't work anymore. You mentioned the quarterback that Georgia gets and Jaden Mayava, I think that's how you say it. They also added three wide receivers. You've got the McLeod kid coming from South Carolina, the defensive lineman. You even got a long snapper in this group. A lot of players you're adding to this. Plus, they got, 22, 23 early enrollees. If they have a meeting tonight, as you say, or at least at some point currently talking about what they're going to do in the winter workouts, Kirby's got, 30 new players, new staff, new roster guys out there to talk to. What do you do in that first meeting? I mean, they're I'm sure they've all seen, hey, you're favored to win it. And, you know, the guys, you're here to play for a championship. But you got to set the expectations day one. And I guess that's in the coming 48 hours or so.
Yeah, and don't forget Trevor Etienne. We want to make sure of. But I think one of the things that I always tried to do in the initial meeting is set the standard, set what we're going to do. Some short-term goals, some long-term goals, how we're going to get there, go over the rules of the building, so to speak, the rules of what's expected of you as a Georgia Bulldog. And even though you've got guys that have been around, you always want to start over. We're starting from scratch. We're going to give the seniors the first chance, but everybody's going to have an opportunity to build their brand, and this is how we're going to do it. And for the new people, you're saying, look, we don't expect you to know exactly how we do this. We've got guys here that are going to help you in a lot of different ways. People show you where your classes are. People help you with your nutrition, a strength gain, tutors, all that. But it's going to be very disciplined about how you're going to develop and your educational output and your football output and your social and your everything about it. So it's a good way to kind of kick things off, and you do the same thing in the summer. But I think from our standpoint, as people that watch from afar, should be a heck of a spring. And one of the things that we brought out last year that I'll say again on this initial show of 2024 is your team has got a chance to develop so much better with these younger guys coming in to give you some people where you can do two spot instead of having 25 or 20 guys leave your team and you don't have enough players to go more than one group at a time. Now you got 22 new players, 6 transfers. You can go out there and practice a little bit better. Your organization's going to stay the same and you can get more reps because you're going against quality people instead of saying, going against some walk-ons that aren't quite as good. And we've got some good walk-ons, but I like the fact that spring practice is just not a situation where you're trying to develop a little bit. Hey, you can really build your team up on a depth standpoint, and those 2 or 3 scrimmages they're going to have are going to be strong. They're going to be good.
Damn right. Coach, why did Kirby Smart think it was so important to bring in a 4th scholarship quarterback? It's something he said in late December. Just in terms of how practice operates, what do people not see about needing to have 4 quarterbacks just to make the system run?
Yeah, I think just 2 things. First of all, just from a depth standpoint, things happen. You know, guys decide to leave. Guys get hurt. Guys aren't as good as what you hoped. And you better have some quality depth there, and not only for this year, but building and developing. If you look at what's happened with Carson Beck, I mean, he hung around, and I give him so much credit for doing that. It was easy. It would have been easy to leave. But look at the benefit he's got now. He's going to, by hanging around, it's going to be kind of the poster for a lot of people. Kirby can say, look what happened with Carson Beck. I mean, he stuck around, did what we told him, and look where he is now. But I think that's one thing, just the depth situation. And then the other thing is, as you mentioned, practice organization. We like to do what we call 2-spot, or we, Georgia. Anybody listen to the show, this is a homer program here. Georgia likes to do 2, and instead of going 1 group out there and 3 or 4 teams standing on the side watching, they'll have 2 groups at one end and 2 groups at the other end doing the same drill. Might be a pass rush drill, might be a pass skeleton drill, might be team run, might be team pass, whatever it might be. But you got the 1s versus the 3s and the 2s versus the 4. And then sometimes you go 1 versus 1 and 2 versus 2 on one field and 3 and 4 on the other. And what I mean by having 2 teams there, you actually have 4. You see what I'm saying? You have the team that they're 4 deep, but some of it's offense, some of it's defense.
Well, I asked because I wanted to contextualize with, you know, a couple of years ago, Georgia brought in Austin Kirksey just to be kind of a practice quarterback. He came from Nevada, but he had an opportunity to play over there. Nathan Priestley, another guy that had college chances elsewhere and wanted to be in Georgia's system. This seems like it's a little bit different than those.
Yeah, I mean, this guy here is legit. Those guys were too. I mean, they had some good background. And, of course, Priestley came here and stayed and just graduated. They did a good job. Jess Sutherland came in from Samford and just wanted to be at Georgia and run out on the field. And he's developed into a tremendous young coach working with Coach Bobo and with the offense. So there's a lot of goal-oriented things that aren't necessarily based on playing as much as the association with the program. If you want to be a coach or you want to, you know, develop your craft. So I think it goes without saying among the many qualities that Kirby has here that really people look at is the way he can train coaches too. I mean, he has a lot of guys out there now that are and we saw Dan Lanning last night doing a good job on TV. I sent a text to Reese Davis. I said, hey, why don't you let Dan talk a little bit? Those Joy Galloway and Desmond Howard got this guy. They've been on there for 2 hours. Let him talk a little bit. But, he did a good job. But I'm fired up about this young quarterback just because I've talked up Gunner and I've talked up Ryan too. I like him. And I think Ryan stepped up and did really well being in here like he did for – few days in December and January, and Gunner played extremely well. But competition is what it's all about. I mean, let's look at Dumas Johnson. He gets hurt, they got two guys step up that play, and it's hard for him to get back on the field. And that's not his fault, but that could happen here in a lot of situations. It happened with JT Daniels. He got hurt and never got back on the field.
Speaking of competition, you bring in Trevor Etienne into a pretty loaded backfield.
Really? You think our backfield's loaded?
We, from a number standpoint, you got this is the seventh running back that Georgia will have.
Yeah, but who we got that's played at running back?
Let me finish this question before you jump down my throat.
I'm not jumping down your throat. We use a big adjective there, loaded running back room.
Why do I even try? My point is, from a number standpoint, you got a lot of them. You bring him in. You did the same thing with some running for some wide receivers. You brought in – you had pretty good numbers, but you lost a bunch of them. You brought in three through the transfer portal, two last year. Talk to me a little bit your thoughts on Etienne and Colby Young and all the additional wide receivers that you're bringing in. A lot of skill players that they brought into this group.
Yeah, I didn't mean to jump – if I jumped down your throat, I just thought – I would think if there's any position that's up for grabs for us next year on our whole team beside defensive corner would be running back. You know, we've got some guys that have played, but we got some real question marks with Roderick Robertson.
Yeah.
You know, all the different – and Branson Robertson, all the different things there. But Etienne gives you a guy that's done it in the league and really got – had a lot of chances to go other places. And Kirby likes to have a lot of receivers – and just not only because of injuries, which has been prominent for us, seems like one receiver gets hurt every year. You know, you look at Ra-Ra down the stretch. You look at my, the kid from
A.D. Mitchell, Jermaine Burton, George Pickens.
Yeah, they just it happens. But Kirby also likes those guys running routes against the DBs too. He likes fresh guys in there, and essentially. Go against the best against best. So, but you got the big guy there and Colby Young from coming in from Miami. Humphrey has had some success in the league playing for Vandy. And I don't know that much about Michael Jackson, except he did have some pretty good stats out there at USC. But I think our receiver room depth wise, losing some guys like we did, that even though they weren't prominent, although the one kid that went to we lost two to Syracuse,
Jackson Meeks, Makai Muse.
Muse and Haynes. Who was the other one?
Jackson Meeks.
And well, where did Haynes go?
Haynes, the receiver?
17. I mean, not 17. We lost one other receiver that
DJ Smith.
And we also lost another one too, a fast guy. Look at that.
You kept Evans.
Yeah, we kept Evans. I thought
that was an important one.
We have a guy named Haynes. Or...
Not coming to my brain, but I'm doing a roster check to make sure I'm not missing somebody here. Oh, yeah. Zeke Haynes. Oh, you are right. We're idiots, Roddy.
No, 13, the super skinny kid that got banged up. And, yeah, the one that the spring up, like, he has that it factor.
He and Smith both – bother me losing because they losing them because they got a lot of potential, but both of them were hurt a lot. So, but you all of a sudden you got Lovett and all, you know, rah-rah, and you got these other guys coming back. And not to mention, I think A.D. Bell's going to be big time. So, but the biggest thing to me about calling plays, being an offensive coach, when you got that structure up front and you're not breaking in a lot of new guys, all of a sudden that right-hand side, if they keep trusted right tackle, it's there. You know, you're going to have a new center, but the left-hand side is there. You know, yeah. Fairchild and Green. And then you got young players that are going to be stressing them there. You know, Daniel Calhoun, Freely, Micah Morris is going – where are you going to put him? I mean, so we got good depth there. Same thing with the D-line. All of a sudden, it looks a lot better because Brinson and Stackhouse have played. Now these younger guys, Hall and these guys coming in here are going to – Hall's already here.
Big Ja. But,
Coach, I did want to ask you about running back, though, because Quinshon Judkins leaves Ole Miss, goes to Ohio State. Now, Georgia had already taken Trevor Etienne, but my question then becomes, would Georgia have had at least conversations, or would Georgia have had their pick of running backs and they chose Etienne?
I think that's so hypothetical, I can't really jump on it. But, you know, to me, there had to be a lot involved. If you look at the two situations and be fair, and I can't say that I can speak exactly on it, but if you look at Junkins, it looks like he was going to go where he could get the most, because he's looking at all these guys coming in and he's played and they're making more than he is. I mean, that's what it looks like on the peripheral now. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's not, but, you know, he was the guy there and he left, and he's going to a place that has some really good success with running backs, and they're not worried about the money part, that's for sure. I mean they're General Motors of NIL at Ohio State.
But now, when he, a couple of weeks ago, there was a rumor that he was going to go into the portal, and you know how you have all those agents in the background. They're like, hey, would you be interested if this were to happen? And they reach out to schools, you know, if the kid can't.
I'm sure at the point when we didn't have ETN, we probably would have been interested in him. But,
exactly.
You know, we've turned down some pretty good guys in the portal before. And who knows if he'd want to come here. But in Trevor's situation, he's looking at a team that, you know, the offensive line's leaving, the coaches are changing, everything's happening down there. So he's looking at where he can go and get ready for the league and also have a chance to win. And that was a win-win situation for us and him, I think. I mean, you got a chance from going from – and you look at Florida right now, I mean, total revamp. I mean, they just changed their defensive staff yesterday. Bringing in Ron Rogers, who's a big hire. They had to give him some big money to come in there with that titanic situation, having a little bit of the bow already in the Atlantic. I mean, I don't know about that deal right now, but Austin Armstrong was the defensive coordinator, and, you know, all of a sudden he's not going to be calling the defense. They got Rogers coming in there. So, but that was a good hire by him, and they changed strength coaches. Still got some other guys to hire. But if you look at one team, you talk about teams in the portal that have been successful, Ole Miss has. But I think between now and July the 1st, Florida will have 70% of their team will be portal players. Wow. I mean, that's between.
I don't think Georgia's done in the portal.
It'll all depend on,
but not that percentage, nothing close to that.
Here's the deal: we haven't had a chance to get this across to our fans, but you got two free agency periods. This one just had finished, and now the next one will be in May after spring practice. There's going to be a lot of guys that thought they had a chance at places that didn't happen. People reaching out to them, giving them more money, giving them more opportunity. You're going to see a mass exodus for a lot of schools in May too.
And the good news is, you know, if you have a situation where a kid leaves Georgia right now, at least he can't go burn you in the SEC. He has to go somewhere else. He has to go outside the conference. So that's
a good hit.
We have a lot more to talk about. I want to take a quick break. I do want to mention our friends over at Athens Ford. They are one of our longest sponsors of our show. They have the 2024 Broncos. They have fantastic deals on the remaining 2023 inventory that they have. You need to swing by there. Any vehicle you get from them, any of the brand new ones, will have a lifetime powertrain warranty on it. I know there's probably a Ford dealership closer to you if you don't live in the Athens area. You know, like, well, Athens is about an hour and a half away. Take the time, drive to Athens, swing by Academia Brewing Company, swing by the campus, you know, drive through, check out your old dorm room, whatever, and get your vehicle from Athens Ford so that you get the lifetime powertrain warranty, because they don't have that on all, not all dealerships have that. It's something unique to Athens Ford. So you need to go by there and grab it. And of course, you're like, well, I'm not in the market for a new one. Well, if you're looking for a pre-owned vehicle, as long as it's under 80,000 miles and not something crazy like a Beamer or something like that, you know, something that just about everybody can work on, you're still going to get the lifetime powertrain warranty. So if you go buy a Ford Camry from them, you're going to get it. So that's my point, is it's unique. You don't just get that anywhere. So swing by Athens Ford when you get the chance.
Also, you can do it online too, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they got hundreds and hundreds of vehicles you can check out online. So you know which ones you're looking for before you go up there. You don't have to just wander around like, hey, I hope y'all got a car for me. Check them out ahead of time. Also, while you're online, you can check out the menu at Academia Brewing Company and see what you want to order before you go there. Check out their newest beers. They always, always have new fantastic beers out. They also have a bunch of different menu items. I mean, as you scroll through their Facebook page, you see all sorts of crazy items that they have, new sandwiches, new that looks fantastic. Try the beef Wellington burger. I mean, who makes a beef Wellington burger?
Get one of those to go for me right now.
The other apricot IQ, which is that's really good stuff. So point being, check them out when you're on they're really close to Athens Ford. So if you're on that side of town, it's kind of a nice 1-2 punch to check them out.
Coach, as there's been announcements and changes within the last, I don't know, a couple of days of staffs and different players, one that caught my attention is Kevin Steele retiring as defensive coordinator in Alabama. And this is a guy, I went and just looked at all the places that he'd been. What a career for him. I'm just curious if you had any Kevin Steele stories, because I know you'll probably cross paths in Oklahoma a little bit, right?
Yeah, I mean, Kevin's had a good career. And, you know, I think it kind of handwriting was on the wall after about the third game when they gave the play calling duties to T-Rob. I don't know his
Tavares.
Tavares Robinson. But, you know, he's 66. He's had a great career and, you know, had a chance to be a head coach. And one of the worst things he ever did was run a play instead of falling on the ball against UNLV. And he got fumbled and he took it for a touchdown. And they lost on the last play of the game. But he did a good job for a lot of places, Tennessee, Auburn, and a good man. And, go down to the beach and hang out, man. That's what you got to do.
Or jump on a podcast and have the second half of your media career.
Yeah.
I remember running into him on the recruiting trail one time. He's out looking at kids and very nice guy. Talked to me for like 10 minutes. I'm like, why? You don't have to talk to me. I know you're here to watch John Atkins or somebody. It was crazy. Super nice.
Very genuine guy.
Yeah. I liked him a lot. Somebody was asking about Trevor Etienne, and I wanted to mention this kind of off the cuff because it was behind the scenes. Knew some people who worked with his older brother in the NIL capacity, and they said that family is phenomenal. They said that, you know, the older brother's great, Trevor's great. And the reason they brought it up to me, they said, look, you know, you can tell people this or not, but he fits the culture at Georgia. And this is, you know, Kirby Smart's very concerned about culture. We have some questions in the comments section about, you know, like some other players who are not as good or who didn't work out as well. I think that we've seen that when you talk about, you know, 70% replacement rate, replacing coaches, the fact that Georgia's keeping just about all of his coaches. I mean, there's very little turnover this year, and Kirby's so cognizant of making sure you don't bring in kids who are making, you know, 3, 4, 5 times as much as starters. The atmosphere that he's trying to cultivate in that room has paid off. I mean, think about it. You missed playing in the playoffs by 3 points in the postseason. You were champions for 728 days. You can't – the margin for error is so minimal, so razor thin. You can't have a cancer in your locker room. And going back to kind of the you know, who do you get out of the portal – some of these guys, you kind of scratch your head at, but I'm just wondering, Coach, how much background material, I mean, how background checking do you do to make sure these guys are going to be a fit? Not just only, you know, scheme-wise, you know, you need a defensive lineman who can, you know, play multiple spots, but how do you gauge that they're going to fit in your program when it feels more and more each day like this is just an absolute business and not a team?
Well, it starts next week on Monday when the coaches go on the road. When they go out and start recruiting these 25, 26 guys that not necessarily that we're going to get, but they do an intense background check on them and categorize them and get a catalog on them, so they have a pretty good idea when they, if they didn't have the chance to get them in the transfer portal, they've already done some background on it. So that's one of the things that Kirby really works hard on the next 3 weeks here is not only looking at guys that we might get, but, you know, guys that other schools are getting too. So it's not as intense as far as other schools, but you do have an idea. And, you know, Coach Del McGee had an existing relationship with the family. He knows the family. And I think that helps. But as far as the background, you better be careful. And I used to say this about a junior college guy when I was back before the portal. If you're going to bring a guy in on top of your team, he better be able to fit and he better be able to play, because nothing's worse than a disgruntled guy that hadn't has left some other place and then isn't playing at your place. So you got to be really careful about that. And we've been very successful on our transfers.
All right, Coach, give me your national championship review, recap, 2023 season. I know we're transitioning to 24, but I don't want it to pass to not get your thoughts on Michigan winning a national championship, which we'll see if it gets vacated.
Yeah, I can just see yesterday morning at the pregame meal when Coach Harbaugh had the offensive staff in there and he was talking to them like Coach Bill Dooley used to talk to us. We're going to cut their ass like boarding out spy. Hey, they cut them up and threw them around. I was really surprised that Washington's defensive front was just, first of all, smaller than I thought. And then they just couldn't get off blocks, and they didn't have the correct fills on their gap control and got caught on some cutback plays. And, of course, Michigan did them a favor there trying to throw the ball some when they were just down their throat. So, but it was still a one-score game with 8 minutes to go, 9 minutes to go. And then, you know, they made that good drive. But the one thing about a passing game that, as much as I like it, there's a lot of things that can happen that are out of your control that you don't control running the ball. One is drop passes, tip passes, guy running the wrong route, quarterback thinking he's going to go one place. They had the guy wide open and didn't make it. So, plus, they hit every play against Texas, every catch that needed to be made, every third down reception. They had some key balls that they could have made that would have kept drives alive. And they attempted 55 passes, and I'm talking about Washington, and maybe called like 60. So had no running game. That Johnson guy obviously was hurt and kept trying to play him, but they got nothing out of the running game. And the other thing, if you read the graphics, explosive plays, 20 yards or more, they were the poster child for that all year. They didn't hardly do any of that. Give Michigan a lot of credit. They gave them a lot of different looks, gave them different fronts, and they got enough vertical pressure on him. But wasn't an upset. I mean, they deserved to win, and hail to the victors. Going to be too bad when it gets vacated.
I agree with you. That's why I said last night, I'm like, hey, Washington, don't feel bad. Yeah, you lose tonight, but you'll win in the long run. I won't get on this diatribe, but I can't let it pass without addressing it. When I watched the playoffs, I kept thinking over and over again, Georgia would kill this team. Georgia would run right over them. I just saw nothing last night that made me think Georgia wouldn't absolutely tan Washington. Beat Alabama in a rematch, beat Texas, beat Wisconsin, I mean Michigan. I you call it a homer show, maybe I'm being a homer, but I'm just thinking when I saw the other teams where they struggled and the fact that when you watched Washington line up against Michigan and it looked like Georgia versus TCU last year, they had a short, dumpy five technique for Washington. I'm like, man, that dude would fold me in half, but against Xavier Truss or against Dylan Fairchild or Tate Ratledge, they would do little origami boats out of this guy and just like they did against TCU. And I'm thinking Georgia would have run roughshod over him. And I saw nothing from Michigan and thought, oh, man, they would have killed Georgia. I'm like, no, it would have been the same thing as that Orange Bowl in Miami. Georgia's too fast for him. Alabama and Texas didn't blow me away. And I'm just thinking, 3 points. 3 points. Yeah, four best teams. My ass. That wasn't the four best.
I agree with you there. I mean, we were definitely the best team in my opinion, but it goes back to the old school of huddling up. I mean, they're just a different team than what you see now. They line up at the last minute and do some shifts and motions, and they do a good job of making you adjust to what they're in, whether it's unbalanced or whether it's whatever it might be. But they've always got the angles on the blocks. They've got really good technique with their line, and they know what they're doing with their offense. And they got enough out of McCarthy, a great run off the goal line to keep
that great run
after that punt. And but I do feel like that Alabama got caught really first half, maybe a little underprepared on the pass rush, couldn't protect, and got a little shaky about throwing the ball down the field, which is what they've done all year, hit the big play, and they couldn't do it against Michigan. And then their defense folded when they had the game on the line. They couldn't stop them. So more power to Michigan. That was give them credit. They got a situation where they won both games with really good special teams, good avoiding penalties, and ACC refs. Come on, God.
And this is stupid, Johnny Surf Talk. Bama beat us on the line of scrimmage. Michigan would have beat Bama on the line of scrimmage, so obviously Michigan would be stronger than UGA. That's bullshit. We've seen that play out 2 years ago. It's not the same.
I think one of the things that's a real bad – I'm not talking about this person's context here, but, you know, you watch – go back and watch the tape. There was a couple of plays where Alabama lined up and knocked us off the ball. That's for sure. That happens in any game. You got 70 plays, you're going to get knocked back. What they did was they won short yardage a couple of times because we didn't block the right people, and we had a turnover. But to say they knocked us around and won the line of scrimmage is a misnomer in my
opinion. Sure, three plays, come on.
Dane, you've watched it filmed online. And then the other thing about Nick saying we didn't think 84-19 could hurt us. Well, what did he call those two passes they called in the fourth quarter that set up touchdown passes for that set it that got the ball down to the goal line for touchdowns for us? So that's easy for him to say, but you know, we had the turnover, and we didn't make short yardage. That's just the bottom line. And going back, if we had them play over again, kind of like the SEC championship game a couple years ago when we didn't rush the quarterback, and then in the championship game we rushed the heck out of him, I think we would have changed our tune and maybe come with more heat against him.
One thing I think I did learn from college football this year, maybe over the past few seasons, as much as quarterback gets the attention on the field, and it should in most cases, it's a quarterback-driven sport, the teams that have won the national championship in recent years tend to be the ones that are performing the best and most consistent on the defensive line. And I think you saw Georgia take a step back at defensive line this year, and that's almost impossible not to do when you're coming after a Jordan Davis and a Jalen Carter. It's hard to find those players. But Michigan was the best team this year on the defensive line. I think that was pretty clear and consistent throughout most of the year. Now, I don't think their offense was very good. I think they were a running team. I don't think J.J. McCarthy is anything special at quarterback. But in terms of being able to stop you up front with fewer players, Michigan's probably better at that this year than anybody.
Yeah, McCarthy, though, 27-1, certainly had better stats when he had the signals, but he's still 27-1. I think one of the things that you and Brent could do is go back over that Georgia-Alabama game, do a little film don't lie about who was physical and who was not, and show that Georgia did some good things and certainly didn't do some good things. But we definitely got beat at the point of attack a couple of times, but not to the point where they physically manhandled us.
No, I mean, if you have a three-point game, that could go either way. And Alabama made a couple plays that Georgia didn't, and you have a turnover at the wrong time, and that's that. Like, that's football.
And that's why I say it's all – the margin for error is razor thin. Georgia had one bad game all year. And, I mean, think about it. Alabama had a – they lost in the regular season. Texas lost in the regular season. Georgia loses in the SEC championship game, neutral site, by three. And that's enough to keep them out of it. Washington – they have their first bad game, if you will, national championship game. You missed it. In other words, everybody had a bad game at one point except Michigan. That's why they went 15-0. That's why they're the champs. They struggled a little bit.
Michigan almost, I mean, they had a tough game against Maryland and Penn State. But, hey, Auburn rushed more than two guys against Alabama. We probably wouldn't be, we'd be all
Razor thin. That's my point. So that's why I kind of want to start the show off talking about the additions that Georgia's making, because I'm like, okay, well, let's put that season to bed. How do you avoid that this year? And again, I thought the addition, bringing in another quarterback, bringing in Trevor Etienne, bringing in three wide receivers, bringing in a defensive lineman, bringing in a long snapper. I mean, people aren't excited about the long snapper. You know me, I love bringing in a long snapper after losing William Moat, just because you want to screw up.
We got a long snapper here on scholarship too. That's going to be good. So we're going to have good competition there, but bottom line is it's going our schedule next year. We better have this kind of squad. I mean, I saw the top 10. I think we got, Texas, Alabama, Ole Miss, all three in the top 10. And we play.
How many of those are home games?
All three on the road.
And, Roddy, that margin for error, it increases a little bit next season, but it's not going to be a whole lot. Like, Georgia can't go lose three games and think it's going to be in the 12.
Yeah, I think you can lose two and be in it.
With that schedule, probably so.
But I don't see us doing that.
Yeah, let's real quick, Coach. Well, before we jump to our next commercial break, give me your thoughts next year. Give me your early prediction on how the next year goes.
Well, you start with a kicking game. We got a good kicking game. I always like to build around that. You got a team that never even gave up a return yard last year. You got the two gunners. If Arian comes back, you got Ian Lovett out there going down the cover. And, you got a great place kicker, and he can kick off too. You got Bell coming back. You got this 17 returning punts. Looks good to me. So our kicking game is going to be good. Defensive question mark to me is corner, but all of a sudden it's a lot better now that Humphrey's back. And we've got Ellis Robinson. You talk about a can't-miss guy that looks on the hoof, that looks like on the tape, and watching him on these at these All-Star games, he's the kind of guy that, like a Malachi Starks, that can come in here and make an instant imprint. You got Bolden back in the secondary that can do the same thing. I think corner is going to be the issue. We got really good linebackers, and we got some guys coming in that's going to go after them. Offensive line, humongous depth and size there to go with the guys. Running back, as you mentioned, is loaded as far as the room.
A lot of numbers. I don't know if any of them are good, but
I like the fact that we saw the kid from California line up out of the backfield, kind of like Cook, and catch a pass in that All-Star game down the field. He looked really good. And then you got Chauncey Boyens coming in here for spring practice. That's going to help him out. And then you got the other back that's got tremendous speed coming in here in the summer. So tight ends, these two tight ends that we brought in really look good on the hoof. really look good. Both of them are just.
Jaden Reddle looks like a monster. And Colton Heinrich, it's not fair to compare him.
And then what other position we need to talk about, but schedule early. You know, we got to play Alabama third game, but they're going to have some definite question marks on their team. Their secondary is going to be a reload. Both corners came out, and when their safeties came out, declared for the pros, lose a lot of
money. Caleb Downs. Just looking around.
They lose Landon to the front, the good pass rusher, both of them. Losing a lot of their offensive line. But we'll see how it goes. But Texas definitely lose a lot of their players too. So team that's probably going to be better than they were this year is Ole Miss, just because their defense has got to be better.
Yeah, it can't be worse. Yeah.
So, I think Ohio State can rebound some too.
Talk about our schedule, son.
I know, but I'm just saying nationally, I think teams at Georgia may end up playing as well.
I'm just busting you there. I thought I was going over our schedule.
I mean, if you want to go, like, the first one, I think Kentucky is pretty interesting. Just if
you're jumping ahead to the end.
Kentucky's the first SEC game, right?
at Kentucky, they'll definitely have our singles. Dumas Johnson and calls the defensive signals, and
Brock Vandegrift on the other side
calls the offense. We're going to have to change them for that game.
I had a photo of Dumas Johnson tackling Trevor Etienne of Florida, and I'm thinking next year the jerseys could be Dumas Johnson in Kentucky blue tackling Trevor Etienne and Georgia white, you know, or red. And I'm like, man, this is a different era of football.
Yeah, it is.
Kind of blows my mind. Right, I know you had a couple questions you want to get in there, Dane, but first I want to mention our friends at YourPie. Simply because it's Tuesday, we haven't mentioned them in a while. I know that a lot of folks are like, man, I'm sick of the holiday eating stuff. I want to get back to some really good food. Hit up our friends at YourPie. It's today's Double Points Tuesday. If you use the app, you know, and trust me, I have it on my phone. I order a pizza. There's like 70-plus locations. I'm closest to the one in LaGrange right now, at this place. If I pop in, hey, I want to pick this pizza up, or I want to pick up the salad or these breadsticks or, you know, the gelato, I tell them when I want to pick it up or just have it delivered, I will get double points. So if I spend, you know, $30 on a couple pizzas and salads and pasta and all that stuff, I'll get 60 points. Well, the next time I go to order, all of a sudden it's like, hey, would you like a free 14-inch pizza? Well, yeah. Would you like free breadsticks? Absolutely. You want a free drink? Hell yeah. So hit up our friends at YourPie, order on Tuesday. And here's the thing, if you've already eaten today, or you're not hungry for you don't want that tonight, order tomorrow. Go ahead and order for Thursday. You want Friday pizza party? Go ahead and order today, but put your order in today and get the double points. So I'm not saying game the system, but game the system with our friends at YourPie. Also, I want to mention myperfectfranchise.net. It is a great way for you to get out of the corporate rat race. Try something different. Hit up My Perfect Franchise. Reach out to Andy Ludecky, Brandon Beachy, the former Braves pitcher. What they're doing is helping you get into a new franchise. So you're the boss. You're the one signing the front of the checks, not the back. You are setting up generational wealth for yourself. You're not dependent on someone else. So hit up MyPerfectFranchise.net. You can reach out to them. Email, text message, spoke signal, whatever you want to do. And look, he's got 3,000 different franchises out there. So there's going to be one that kind of fits your need, your time, if the time that you have available, your finances. So if you, or heck, if you just want to say what's hot right now. I mean, I had a 30-minute conversation with those guys, and all of a sudden I'm like, I need to invest in certain companies because I see what is recession-proof. So hit up our friends at MyPerfectFranchise.net when you get a chance.
Reports saying that Tennessee.
I want to mention that Roddy brought up about coaching staffs, and Ohio State's making some major moves on their staff, revamping their offensive staff. A couple guys are going to be out, and their secondary coach, safety coach, is being reassigned. So, you know, they're making moves. You're going to see throughout January, with these pro staffs starting to assimilate, a lot of times the guy will know somebody in college that used to work with him before he was in the pros, and you start getting these people that, like last year, Glenn Schumann was interviewed and probably could have gone to the Eagles. Todd Monken went up there to the Ravens. You know, the Falcons got a head job open. Who knows what's going to happen there.
And so do the Tennessee Titans, fired Vrabel while we've been on air.
Oh, they did?
They did.
Yeah.
Is that because he's going to go to the Patriots or what?
I would imagine that that's who the Patriots would target. But the Panthers also need a coach. I mean, it's
– Yeah, but I'm saying the fact that we've got an established staff is hopefully will stay intact, but it's hard to keep that year in and year out. And we got – premium guys that are going to have opportunities. So I hope we can continue to keep them, but let's see what happens here. But
My point was, I was surprised you kept them so far.
Right. That was a good point. It's going to be even more so if they're still here in February.
Yeah.
I think that's why you hired Muschamp and Bobo to some extent. There's some stability that comes with that for where they're at in their careers.
True.
Not saying they couldn't leave, but I think that's just smart to have them there.
And here's my thing about if you're a college coach and right now you're dealing with NIL and having to re-recruit all your players 3 or 4 times a year, all the ones on your roster, you've got the transfer NIL issues, the 24/7 recruiting calendar, the calendar moving up constantly. I've talked to some college coaches who went on to the NFL who, you know, were at Georgia in the past, and I'm like, man, there's pressure here, but it's just your atmosphere is so much nicer. Your daily life is nicer. You have to really love college football to put up with what's going on now. Yeah.
Good point. I think there's going to be some – I mean, there's going to be some college guys that are going to look at it down the road. I mean, it's hard to keep this kind of intensity 365 days. Of course, they're paid a lot of money and everything, but so what do we got here, Dane? You got some tough questions here?
Yeah, a lot that we had this produced well because some follow-up questions from what we've had. Spank Me Dog says, with the new quarterback from UNLV, is there a heightened concern about Gunnar Stockton going elsewhere?
Well, certainly that's something that comes up. But if he does, it'll be after spring because he's a competitor too. He's already said he wanted to come back, and I'm sure that they – told him exactly what the thought process was. And it's the same thing with Gunner that it is with the linebackers and the secondary and everybody else. You say, hey, you're going to have competition here and you got to win the job. And that's the way it's going to be. But he raises a good question there. But I would think that, you know, we'll see how spring goes, but it'll be hard for us to still have 4 scholarship guys after spring, to me. I mean, because guys want to play. I mean, that's just the way it is.
Yeah, it's going to be tough. The question from Eddie Ackworth, is the number 2 spot up for grabs? Absolutely. Hell, number 1 spot in Kirby's situation, you know, if you can beat out this – look at Dumas Johnson. He was number 1 guy, no questions asked. But then somebody came in and outperformed him, and all of a sudden he had to transfer. So yeah, I think it was ballsy for them to bring him in. And there was some confusion early on because some people were correcting us, saying that when we mentioned the transfer portal, guys, if you transfer in the first open period of the transfer portal, yes, you can go play for an SEC team right away, right, like Dumas Johnson, Brock Vandegrift. But after spring, if you are at Georgia and you enter the transfer portal and you go to an SEC team, you have to sit out a year. Right. So in the spring, after spring practice, if Gunner or whoever on the Georgia squad transfers, they can't go play immediately at Auburn or Tennessee or Alabama or Kentucky. They have to go somewhere else.
The only thing that I would add to that would be the recent court ruling. That is an SEC rule. The recent court ruling that came out and said that that people could transfer more than once and do all this stuff, and were – you know, all these people that weren't able to be eligible all of a sudden were eligible because they didn't do such and such. I don't know if the SEC can keep that rule and based on the court ruling. So that will be something that will probably be addressed during SEC meetings.
This question from San Diego Dog 1, what did Michigan's defense do differently against Jalen Milroe than what Georgia did?
They rushed his ass. I mean, they got after him. We didn't get the pressure on him. We more spy-oriented, and we still held them to under 300 yards. I mean, you should win. You don't want to get the turnover, but we didn't pressure him near as much as we probably could have.
From Drew Yang 96, Coach, what do you think of Georgia's defensive line for next season?
I think it's really more than solid. I think a lot of experience. Like tremendous competition. Some of these younger guys are going to get better. And, we don't have the flat-out superstar like Jalen Carter or Walker, but a lot of good players and a lot of good competition.
Satilla River Dog says, Coach, how much did you enjoy watching Texas lose in the playoffs? I'm assuming you don't care for them very much.
You know, I respect Texas, but I definitely was pulling for – you know, I pull for anybody that's playing Texas, except maybe Oklahoma State. When those two play, Cowboys, it's hard. But, Sark's done a good job there. I mean, here's another staff that's getting revamped. He lost his defensive coordinator, got a job, our assistant defensive coordinator, got the Nevada job. So he's bringing in a guy that used to coach with him at Washington. But that's going to be a revamped team a little bit. Certainly, they got Ewers back, who's preseason Heisman guy. But I thought one of the funniest pictures I saw in the whole bowl scenario was Ewers sitting at the table by himself and all these other people. He's the number one quarterback on the team in the playoffs. And Peyton Manning's nephew Arch is over there surrounded by people talking to him. He's only played in one half of one game this year, and he had all the attention. And he's making close to $3 million NIL, and I don't know what Ewers is making. But Ewers is a great example of a guy. Boy, you think Ohio State wouldn't like to have him back?
Yeah.
He would be – I guess they got the quarterback from Kansas State coming in there, and we'll see how that works.
Coach, that photo of Arch Manning, though, I tried to explain to people on the dog fence that that is what happens when you don't have your players have access to media at all for a season. Like, that may have been that media's first chance to talk to Arch Manning all year, where they have talked to Ewers.
Yeah. I guess Sark's got the same thing that Nick does.
Hey, we can have a whole hour-long conversation on the bull crap that happened after Georgia's Orange Bowl. It's supposed to be an open locker room and some of the stunts that were pulled in there. That was
this year?
Infuriating, yes.
There wasn't an open locker room?
It was supposed to be. They took every pain to make sure it did not happen. It was nuts. But, hey, we still got some interviews in, so that counts for something. But – I'm with you there. I thought that was a great picture, and I'm like, man. To me, it's also part of our fascination with QB number two. We've had a lot of questions about the QB. The most popular guy on every football team is a backup quarterback. I've never gotten over it. At every level of football, it's always the one guy. No one ever talks so much about bringing in the backup, three technique on the left side. It's always that second QB could do a better job.
You look at our team. Projection number one next year on all these preseason polls. Carson Beck was out there in the NFL draft, we probably wouldn't be in the top five. I mean, just because of the conjecture there. I mean, I think we could be regardless in my own mind, but as far as the public persona, you have an established guy back. And how about LSU going with $2.5 million for the defensive coordinator from Missouri,
highest paid assistant in the country.
2 years ago, he was a linebacker coach at LSU, and Coach Kelly told him he couldn't stay. So now he's got him back.
And Harley Dog 80, Coach, who do you think will be the first and second string running backs next year?
Yeah, I think for sure ETN's got to be the number one guy just to look at, and then hopefully the kid from Mississippi,
Branson Robinson,
will be ready to go. Talking to Coach McGee, the kind of injury that he had, I think they're going to really be very careful with him in spring and probably not let him go full speed to fall camp. There's no advantage with that kind of injury practicing this spring full boat, so. I would say those would be the top two.
Bulldog Ben, do you have projected starters in the secondary with a couple of guys leaving? Does KJ Bolden start as a freshman at safety?
It'll be hard, but he's got a better chance having reporting early like he's going to and being here all spring. But I would say three corners would be Humphreys, Harris, and Everett, safety, Starks, Aguero probably be a safety, and maybe Dan Jackson back there. Aguero be the star, and then Bolden would be a real, real good chance. And then you got the two guys I mentioned, Bolden and Robinson, got a chance to jump in there pretty quick.
From UGA BOZ, Coach.
Don't forget about that other corner too, number eight. What's his name, Roddy? The kid from – is he from Indiana or where is he? He's a good-looking kid. I watch him as number eight.
You got Daniel Harris, who I think played so much.
Yeah, I mentioned Daniel, but who's the other guy?
I'm pulling up to make sure.
Freshman coming in. Look at our freshman DBs. I don't want the fans not to remember him.
Oh, you mean Andre?
What's his name?
Andre.
What's his last name?
Andre Evans.
Yeah. Guy's a player.
Okay. When coach says they're a player, my ears perk up.
Yeah. I mean,
it starts with an O, so it's
eyeball test. He looked good.
Final question that we'll have from the dog vent today, and then we can wrap. UGA, BOZ. Coach, when you came to Georgia from Marshall, how did transfers like Landis Gary and Jermaine Wiggins fit in? I'm asking because is there a huge difference in reception for early enrollees as compared to the portal players? And I understand that rules are different from the late 90s, but just curious how transfers fit in that way.
Yeah, I think one of the things that Kirby will get across to the players tonight, and something I always talk to our players about, is you know the angst that you had when you got here and all the things that you had to go through. These young men are getting ready to do the same. Reach out to them. Help them. Go up and introduce yourself. Ask them over to your apartment. Do some things socially with them where they can understand that they're on your team now. They're your teammates. They're your brothers. Let's get to know each other. And we work hard on that connectivity. You hear Kirby talking about that, meeting-wise, getting to know each other and not just meeting with the defensive backs, meeting with different areas. And that's what you got to do. I never will forget, Landis Carey was a really outright guy that said what he wanted to. And about the second or third meeting, when he couldn't play the next year, I mean, you know, he was going to have to sit out. And he got up in front of the whole team and said, look, some of you guys aren't buying into what Coach D's saying. And all I'm telling you is I was around him for 2 years. If you do what he says, we'll win. I took a lot of guts to stand up in front of the whole team and say that.
Dude, I remember him in that first game. Everybody meets in the middle of the field. And there's one guy, I think, did he wear 22?
Yeah.
He's jumping up and down. I'm like, who is that psychopath? You know, because everyone's kind of huddled in and he's just going crazy. And I'm looking on the roster. I'm like, oh, Landis Gary. He can't even play this year. He looked like he was going to take the field as a starter and knowing he had to sit up the whole year.
And I had a good relationship with Coach Pruitt, the coach up there. And I said, look, I got a lot of these guys are asking me to come. I said, I'm not going to take anybody from your team. This is your team. But if they decide to transfer, then I'm going to take them, you know. But I'm not going to ask them to. And those are two, Jermaine Wiggins and Landis Gary, that came. And just amazing. The first year that you could have a camp back in the old days where your signees could actually come to camp, we brought Jermaine Wiggins in from Boston, and he worked out with our team. And I told our guys, I said, look, this guy's going to start for us here at freshman. He's going to start at Marshall. I said, you know, we can't worry about this other guy's feelings. He's starting because we didn't have that much depth anyhow. And got played in the Super Bowl. And, you know, what a thrill for him to go back and play for the New England Patriots, being from Boston like that. He's got a son now that's playing out of Arizona, I think. And Landis has got a son playing up in West Virginia, and Landis is actually coaching some football up around the Baltimore area.
Love that.
Another thing I want to say about Landis Gary that everybody needs to know when you're recruiting and all, if you got good mama at home, if someone going right with Landis, she would jerk a knot in his ass pretty quick. And that's the way it is with most of these moms and dads. I mean, that's what Kirby does a good job too. If you've got somebody poor mouthing it and saying, well, I'm not getting a chance and I'm not doing all this, hey, good family home will say, look, this, you're the one that decided to go there, stick it out. It's your
shoot. Yeah. Try crossing to Mary Delp or Miss Riddle. Whew, I can't imagine either one of those.
Is it Riddle or Riddell?
I always said Riddle.
But all right.
I'll call him Sir because he's a big old boy.
I got to run. I have a meeting on campus, but y'all enjoy wrapping the show.
All right. Good to see you, Dane.
All right, Coach, real quick, because there's a kind of complimentary question that went along with the ones about that went along with this. It's from Evan Grimes. He says, how do you break in the freshmen? How do you get them to forget about their star rankings and focus on the team? Kind of that buy-in you were talking about that Alandis got up and said, hey, everybody, I need you guys to buy in. When all these freshmen, and we're the ones telling them, we're the ones, hey, you're a five-star, you're a top 50 pick, you know, we project you to be a first, second-round pick. How the hell do you get them to forget that?
Well, one of the things is a real paradox there. The first thing is you don't want them to be so overwhelmed that they don't think they have a chance. You know, hey, how am I going to be able to do this? Look at this guy. He's got all this experience. He knows all these calls. He knows where to line up. So you don't want them to be overwhelmed with that. But at the same time, you don't want them thinking they can just throw their helmet out on the field and win a job just because they got all that. So you got to get the fine line between competing, learning the system, and you know, Kirby talks about losing weight. These guys got to lose weight. They got to get in condition. But I really like the fact that we have so many meetings in the off season now. You got all these walkthroughs that the NCAA lets you go out there and learn your craft. You know, it's hard to be a player if you're confused, if you don't know what to do. So you get a chance to learn the system, and we've got a very complex system, but it's a proven one. And these walkthroughs and all really help you in the off season. And I think that's part of the thrill of being a coach, is seeing a young guy come in with the tools and then putting them in the right situation and utilizing that.
I love it. All right, folks, you can't get stuff like that anywhere else because the coach has actually done it. For me, if you'd asked me the same thing, it has been pure hypothetical guessing because none of us have been through it, but coach has done it more than once. So anyway, that's all time we have for this week's show. We went a little long, but we hadn't had a show in a while. So we will be back next Tuesday for another episode. Hopefully,
stay dry.
Yeah, stay dry, folks. Batten down the hatches, and we will see you next week. Take care.